Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Friday, May 15th. On March 9th, an influential conspiracy theorist who goes by the initial Q and apparently has President Trump's ear issued some ominous social media posts that said the coronavirus was real, not a hoax, but it was welcome, and his followers should not be afraid. That sounds pretty fringy, right? And very few Americans actually believe it, of course, but in the context of today's politics, Q is a player. Conspiracy theories with no plausible explanations necessary seem to abound maybe more than ever. And here's the thing. They have the ear of the President of the United States in a surprising number of cases and sometimes preoccupy the highest office in the land in the middle of a pandemic. Joining me now to talk about how conspiracy theories are appealing to a growing number of Americans and how and why the president often amplifies them is Adrian LaFrance, executive editor of The Atlantic. Adrian, welcome back to WNYC. Thank you for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
So Q and his base, called QAnon, for people who don't already know it, have come to define a worldview which subscribes to the idea that the elite, especially Democrats, are puppet masters of American society with nefarious intentions. Can you give us more details of what they believe about that?
That's right. So this may sound familiar to those who remember Pizzagate, but the idea is that there is this cabal of elites that is secretly torturing children, and they're working in concert with the quote-unquote deep state, and that Trump is the savior who will ultimately thwart them. Q is an anonymous internet poster who posts clues that they refer to as Q drops, and the people who follow this conspiracy theory like to piece together through the Q drops to try to sort of decipher them.
Why did they latch on to Trump?
Well, it's a pro-Trump conspiracy theory. So it, at its very core, from the very beginning, from the first time this Q, anonymous Q poster appeared on the internet, it has been, the entire story is in support of Trump and his presidency.
But you don't have to be pro-Trump. No, I'm saying that backwards. You can be pro-Trump and not think that coronavirus is welcome.
Right. So this is a subset of Trump supporters. The interesting thing is you'll often see people refer to QAnon as a far-right conspiracy theory, and that's not exactly right. It's really a pro-Trump conspiracy theory. And the difference, of course, is that Trump is not an ordinary Republican, if we even know what Republicanism is anymore. But it's really at its core, it's a pro-Trump conspiracy. So you won't find, or at least I haven't found, a Q follower who is anti-Trump yet.
And you write, the story of Q is premised on the need for Q to remain anonymous. What do we know about Q, and why do QAnon adherents, trust Q so much, but why do they bank on somebody who's anonymous at all?
This is a great question. I mean, when I set out to report this story, of course, one of the things I wanted to know was who Q was. And I didn't figure it out, I should say. And I also found that the people who are really true believers didn't seem to care. So they're not preoccupied with who Q is. And there's this sort of blind faith in the idea that Q is a military insider. I asked people over and over again, why do you trust this random person or people on the internet? Why do you believe? And it was sort of just this irrational, almost spiritual response of just, I can feel it. I just believe it. I have faith in Q. I know it's real.
And you write that while Q has been absent from giving coronavirus guidance specifically, QAnon adherents have been reading into signs from President Trump. One of them was about a yellow tie. Can you explain that?
Right. So this was a post that sort of ricocheted across the internet on various social platforms where people were drawing a connection between the color yellow in its interpretations as a maritime flag, which they said meant that the situation was all clear, that, you know, something was okay. And so therefore, because Trump was wearing a yellow tie to a press briefing, it was some sort of signal or clue that, you know, the idea was that coronavirus wasn't really a problem because he was wearing a yellow tie.
And then you write about how Trump actually retweeted a QAnon-themed meme back on March 8th of him playing a violin. Can you explain the significance of that one?
Well, I'm not sure if I can explain the significance, but the significance for the rest of us, I mean, within the Q universe, there were words overlaying the tweet that were within the sort of lexicon of the Q community. And so people picked up on it and got excited because they felt like within the Q followers, they felt like Trump was communicating with them. The significance for the rest of us is that President Trump is repeatedly retweeting accounts that use these sort of Q slogans. And so he gives this group reason to believe that he is on their side or otherwise secretly communicating with them.
And I'm curious how much you think, and your research reveals, that the QAnon community is actually interested in spreading misinformation about COVID-19?
It's such a good question. I mean, I imagine there are some people who realize the potential to spread information and do so maliciously and see Q as a channel for that. But in terms of the people who I have been referring to as sort of the true believers, I don't think their intent is to spread information. I think they really believe in Q, and they believe that all of these falsehoods are in fact real.
You know, even that could be a matter of contention. You've been referring to believers. You just said they believe all these things are true. We have a tweet from a listener who writes, Q and QAnon's garbage are not beliefs. It's propaganda designed to undermine and divide. Your reaction?
Well, that certainly could be true. I mean, so you have to take apart whoever is behind Q, or the people who are even promoting it for their own personal gain. You know, there are sort of these Q influencers who amass large audiences just by deciphering Q on Twitter and YouTube. And so I do believe that there are people who are using Q for their own gain, either political or personal. But there is also a contingency of people who is buying it. So, you know, both things can be true.
Douglas calling from France. Douglas, you're on WNYC with Adrian LaFrance. Hi.
Hi. Thank you, Brian. Thank you for taking my call. So I wanted to comment specifically about this issue of Q. It is that you mentioned that he said that the virus is welcome. So I'm now to tell you why the virus is welcome. The virus is welcome because Q and all of the hyper-conservative followers are trying to get rid of minorities through the virus. This is their express agenda. They want to eradicate what they consider to be, what, vermin, through the promulgation of a rabid virus. And why else would all of the steps be taken to not control the virus? Why else would an entire subpopulation of the country all of a sudden engage in something so seemingly irrational? So I just wanted to offer this. I know some of these people. I hate to say it, but my brother's wife and associates believe in this stuff.
Adrian, and so, let me get a response. Doug, you could stay there, but Adrian,
it's not getting to the heart of it.
Adrian, on the actual racist agenda behind Q?
I mean, certainly there have been Q drops or sort of narratives within Q that espouse racist beliefs. I mean, there is this sort of Venn diagram overlap between a lot of the racist views that some Trump supporters share. And so with regard to the coronavirus specifically, I haven't seen that, but yes, I think you do see a threat of some racist beliefs within the Q universe.
And a listener on Twitter asks, how much does this influence, I'll rephrase this a little bit, to, I think, a better question. How much could this influence and lead to domestic terrorism?
Well, it's a good question. And, there was an FBI report, I think it was last year, that warned specifically of this as a threat for domestic terrorism. I mean, we've had incidences like, the Pizzagate incident where someone brought fired weapons in a DC pizzeria. This was someone who had been really obsessed with the Pizzagate theory, which is a precursor to QAnon. There was an incident where someone sort of parked an armed vehicle on the Hoover Dam and was espousing conspiracy beliefs. And so, law enforcement does view this as a domestic terror threat, or views that the people who are drawn to these sorts of conspiracy theories, it's dangerous.
Karen in Garrison, you're on WNYC. Hi, Karen.
Corinne.
Oh, Corinne, I'm sorry. Hi.
Oh, hello. Thank you so much for taking my call. I love your program. I've been listening for years, and
thank you.
Do a tremendous service. And this just caught my ear because I, not so long ago, was on a Zoom call, reunion call with a high school class, just 16 in our class. This is a long time ago, and from a private school in New York City. And I was really surprised to hear, we were catching up, and with what we've been doing. And I was really surprised to hear from this guy who I went to school with for 6 years, really smart boy then. But he was talking about, of course, we got to Trump. He was talking about Trump as the savior and the deep state. I didn't know what he was talking about. And that coronavirus is a designer virus. And he said, yes, I know you all think this is a conspiracy, but it's not. This is the real thing. I'm not into anything. This is the truth. And people are going to catch on soon. So he was totally convinced. He's a very smart person. And it was amazing. But he thought he was doing us a service by letting us know. And
did you have enough contact with this old high school friend through Zoom? I realize it sounds minimal. You're at a little Zoom reunion. But were you able to develop a theory of how he got hooked by this?
Well, I think I have spoken with him, every few years, through the years. And I think he has been, this has been building up about, there are certain groups of people who are controlling the world and money people. It's all back to the money. Hmm. And,
right.
This is what's destroying us. And also he talked about the 5G, Wuhan had the 5G, and that's why it started there. And that it's all 5G
internet.
Corinne,
thank you very much. Very troubling but revealing. Let's go on to another one. Candace in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hi, Candace.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to ask about who these followers are. I'd like to know if you know approximately how large this group of followers is and what the demographic of the group is. And you had mentioned earlier that there are many people who are buying it. I know that's figurative, but how do you know who's buying it?
All good questions.
Yeah, so these are very good questions. And it's really hard to quantify the true believers, as I've been calling them, just because of the nature of how this conspiracy theory is spread. So the places where you'll find Q supporters sort of materialize offline are Trump rallies, for example. But one of the ways in my reporting that I set out to try to sort of trace the extent to which this is growing is looking at the different groups online, within Facebook, on YouTube, the number of subscribers to Q-related YouTube channels, and you can see a clear uptick in the amplification of this message. But again, this goes back to the question of how do you discern if someone's just participating to be trolling or for fun or for fan fiction versus really, really believing in it. And that's something that we can't entirely quantify.
And question from Twitter, is there any evidence that Q has just been devised cynically by interests working to promote Trump and any possible international connections to governments seeking to promote chaos here?
I don't have any evidence through my reporting that there is foreign influence, but I do think that anytime you're seeing sort of chaos and division sown using the social web, that it's a valid question, absolutely. And it goes to the question of how many of the sort of like fervent Q tweeters who show up in people's timelines, like, are they, how many of them are bots? I mean, that's another question. But I think there, because there is clear political gain for Trump at stake, you do have to ask what motivates people's participation and the origins of Q. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I guess one could at least theorize that in an election season where things could be so close, if it's like 2016, it was so few votes that gave Trump Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and Michigan and flipped the election, that if they can motivate a few fringy people, let's say a few thousand fringy people who might not vote otherwise because they might be otherwise so alienated from politics, to get out to the polls and, you know, turn out for him, then it could be one of those little groups that actually flips an election. I want to ask you before you go, we've got a few minutes left, and then we're going to get to our Ask the Mayor segment. But on Monday, President Trump peddled another theory that may just be hardball politics, or it may count as conspiracy theory. I'm curious to get your take, because I don't want to, you know, conflate regular politics, even if we think people are lying and everything, with conspiracy theories. The thing about President Obama and, quote, on Obamagate and Obama committing what Trump tweeted was the biggest political crime in American history, is that this or is that something else?
Well, it's something else, but this alleged scandal that the president refers to as Obamagate does fit within the Q worldview. And so the president has been ambiguous about what he's even referring to with Obamagate, but it squarely fits into this sort of, you know, the actual battle between Trump and the intelligence community, which is in Trump, you know, Trump does frequently attack the intelligence community. And then that actual narrative fits into this Q worldview where they're saying that there's a quote unquote deep state working to undermine Trump. So they merge. And as for what Obamagate even is or whether it's actually a crime, I mean, that gets incredibly murky, too, because the president hasn't been able to articulate what he's talking about.
And here's a perfect example of that, which at least lends plausibility to the theory that it's a conspiracy theory, and it doesn't matter if there are facts to back it up. This begins with Washington Post reporter Philip Rucker asking the president a question.
What crime exactly are you accusing President Obama of committing, and do you believe the Justice Department should prosecute him?
Obamagate. It's been going on for a long time. It's been going on from before I even got elected. And it's a disgrace that it happened. And if you look at what's gone on, and if you look at now all of this information that's being released, and from what I understand, that's only the beginning. Some terrible things happened, and it should never be allowed to happen in our country again.
So there was an investigation in 2017. It was really of Russia interfering in the U.S. election. And then they asked to unmask the identities of some Americans who were apparently having contact with Russians. And that led to maybe Michael Flynn getting on the FBI's radar and things like that, that there may be perfectly plausible and legal explanations for. You know, or there may have been some bad behavior by investigators. I think that's all being sussed out in addition. But, you know, when Trump throws out a phrase like biggest political crime in history and makes up a term Obamagate, and then when he's asked point blank by a reporter, a very straightforward question, what crime? All he can say is, you know what crime. That makes it sound like peddling a conspiracy theory.
Well, and if you notice the ambiguity and sweeping nature of the way he describes it, that something terrible has happened and it should never happen again, without saying what it is. I mean, this is a striking parallel to how the people who are Q followers talk about the wrongdoings that they're tracking. They can never give details. They just talk about how terrible it is.
We just have 30 seconds left. Why are you, as executive editor of The Atlantic, which deals with so many serious things? The Atlantic is amazing, and it seems to just get better all the time.
Thank you.
The, you know, there are people who would say, Adrian, really? Ignore these people. Don't give them oxygen. And you're doing a whole series on conspiracy theories at The Atlantic. You must think something is at stake.
Absolutely. I mean, the truth is at stake. Our shared sense of reality is at stake. Enlightenment values are at stake. Empiricism is at stake. You know, I understand that line of thinking entirely because I found myself thinking the same thing during birtherism when Trump was sort of just flirting with a presidential run. And now he's the president. And a lot of what legitimized his candidacy for people was what he said about the lies that he peddled about President Obama. So the truth matters, and we have to confront those who are spreading misinformation and take it seriously.
Adrian LaFrance is executive editor of The Atlantic. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is obviously also a Daily Coronavirus podcast under the circumstances in our country right now. We'll keep staying on top of things to serve you the best we can. And remember, this podcast is excerpted from my live weekday call-in show, The Brian Lehrer Show. If you want to be a caller or just hear it live, it's from 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time on WNYC Radio in New York, or online at WNYC.org. You can also tweet a question at us anytime. Just tweet at Brian Lehrer. Thanks for listening today.